Hi, and welcome to eWabs, episode 88, recorded on March 24th, 2013.
He's the home voiceover studio engineer to the stars in Los Angeles, California. A Virginia Tech grad whose knowledge of the latest recording gear is second to none. He's a voice actor and the home studio master, hailing from Buffalo, New York. His home studio skills and knowledge of voiceover recording is unmatched. When Dan and George talk shop, people listen, and the talk continues tonight. Welcome to East West Audio Body Shop. And now, live from his high-tech facility in Santa Monica and his penthouse studio in Buffalo, here are George Whittam and Dan Leonard.
Good evening. If you haven't figured it out yet, I'm Dan Leonard in the East.
And I'm George Whittam in the West.
And together, we're still East West Audio Body Shop. I don't know. Where did we ever come up with that? We just like started that the first week and it's like.
You came up with that. It was just sort of like, you like this? I'm like, yeah, sure. That'll
all
work.
All right. Sure. Whatever.
lots of market research and you know, committees.
Oh, yeah, tons of market research have gone into this program. Right. Anyway, well, the smell of chicken soup is overwhelming the Leonard household this week. And happy Passover to all our Jewish friends. 2 days of feasting and then a week of basically constipation. It's if you know what I'm talking about. Anyway, that's going to be fun. I got lots of people coming over for that on Tuesday night. It's going to be
fun.
A major eclectic crowd of people. So I wish you could smell what it smells like up here right now. But it basically smells like chickens and garlic.
I'll have to use my imagination.
Yes. Okay. Or just tell Amy, throw a chicken in a pot, throw some garlic in it, and it's like smell-o-vision. Anyway. So how are you today?
I'm doing fine. Had a nice little gathering last night for like a really, really late Ella birthday celebration. Some of our friends were sick over that period of time, so we had to make it up to them. And yeah, it was a beautiful day. Spent a couple hours with Ella at the beach, watching her run along the water. Very fun.
She's sort of like a sandpiper, isn't she?
A little bit, yeah. Yeah, it was a lot. It's always a lot of fun. We're blessed to be here. We're going to stay here as long as we possibly can.
You are living in paradise.
Trying our best.
Anyway, we have a great show tonight. So does Jay Leno, and sometimes his show really sucks, but what are you going to do about it? But tonight, we've got a great show because we've got a great guest. This guy. The best way to describe him, if you're ever in any of the forums, like on the VOBB or some of the LinkedIn forums or some of the other ones, if he comes into one of the forums, into a thread, he can take a thread and turn it into yarn.
That's a good thing, right?
Yeah, oh, it's a great thing because he knows what he's talking about.
Right.
He's been in the business a long time, and he's joining us tonight all the way from San Francisco. Like, I'm in Buffalo, big deal. J.S. Gilbert. Will be joining us tonight, and he's a great guy. When you get to know him, you realize what a fabulous guy he is, mm-hmm. and what a great resource he is in our business. He will be joining us at the bottom of the hour, as we say in the broadcast biz.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got my tip of the week, and you're going to lead off with something I think everybody needs to understand, and that is dealing with mic technique and mic proximity.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The thing about, I mean, we've talked about this topic before. If you're a real dyed in the wool fan of eWebs, but I thought I would frame it a little bit differently this time and talk about mic positioning and technique in regards to working in different sized rooms. Because, you know, as I've been doing this over the last couple of years and I've been hearing so many different home studios and samples of so many varying sizes, I'm starting to realize that one of the common threads for those who work in a small booth is that I find that they really do have to work the mic tighter in proximity than someone who gets to work in a larger space. Now, that's a gross generalization, but as long as a larger space has been acoustically treated correctly, you can get away with the mic being quite a bit further away than I think you can get away with in a small space. And I'll try to explain why and demonstrate a little bit with the Portabooth Pro that's right over my shoulder. One of the challenges I think people have, especially when using things like the PortaBooth Pro, let me move my mic camera a little bit. There we go. Is they often will either just A, put the microphone on a little tripod stand on the bottom, which doesn't always get it high enough or in the right optimal position, or B, they will just try to clamp the microphone onto the end of their boom, and then the cable can interfere with the top of the booth, and they can have trouble with that. So in this particular case, I'm using this little on-stage stands clamp-on mic arm, and I promised to get the model number of that part for you guys in our show notes because the little box for it is missing. But this little clamp-on arm that's sticking out here is bolted onto the boom arm, right? So now I have control over exactly where the mic is going to be inside this space, and I can get the mic in an optimal position. When you're working with a PortaBooth or any small space, the mic positioning is uber critical. Uber critical. I mean, it really is even more critical than it would be in a larger studio. And the reason for that is now because you're likely not having, you're not going to have a room that's been heavily acoustically treated. If you're using one of these, is the assumption. Now you have to be that much tighter onto the mic, so the mic hears mostly you and as little of the room that you're in as possible. You're trying to get that mic to be hearing mostly you directly from the mic and as little of you bouncing around the room as possible. So because of that, proximity becomes even more critical when you're working in one of these smaller spaces. So what I'm going to do is just show you, if I can get this locked in right here, the way I might recommend using the mic in, say, something like a PortaBooth. And this is also going to hold true for working in any kind of a tiny booth or small closet space studio. But for this particular example, I'll use the PortaBooth. So you can use this would work for the PortaBooth Pro or the PortaBooth Plus. But one thing that I think people often do is they have the microphone too far back in to the PortaBooth Pro. And when it gets too far back in, sometimes you get a little bit of the mid-range or low mid-range buildup that can sometimes happen when you're back.
Sounds like you're in a cave.
Yeah, it can sometimes do that, right?
Or a coffee mug.
Right. So I find that having the mic actually much closer to the front is actually a lot more advantageous. This might be a little bit further closer than I would normally do, but you can just, because this arm is separate, you can move it around and fine tune the position. So, and you could also flip it around upside down if you want to also. But the idea being here is that you can get it up nice and high, because that's another issue people have when they're dealing with small, really small spaces or any kind of instant booth, PortaBooth type of situation. Is it seems like there's a compromise in how they hold their copy. They just can't get the copy in the right position to get the best possible sound. You're either, you know, you're trying to get it just off the side of the booth, or you're trying to, you know, find a position that's going to work well for you. But I know Dan can back me up on this. We found out that what actually ends up working pretty well with the PortaBooth Pro and the Plus or any of these small booths is to actually have the microphone pretty close to the outer lip. I'd say it's about 3 inches from the front right now. And actually having your copy over top. So I could actually lower this a little bit. And with some creative arranging with a copy, you could have like a small desktop copy holder, or at least for, you know, short reads, you could hand hold your copy over the top like this.
Or an iPad.
Or you could have a little iPad stand, and you could actually have the iPad stand on here. But now what you're doing is you're actually talking right over the top of the microphone. So right over the top lip of the microphone. So if I was to actually let you hear what this would sound like, because I've done hours and hours of preparation to have this ready for you. Now I'm lying, I put this together in the last 30 seconds.
30 seconds or so.
But let's see. Let's see if I turn up the right mic here. There we go.
You got it.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So now I'm speaking sort of over top. This is a large diaphragm condenser. It's just an inexpensive MXL mic. And I didn't take my time to rig up my strap, the ABS strap that Harlan also sells, to keep it from sagging. So you can see it is slowly but surely sagging on me.
So let's see if we can brace it a little bit before, because I did this kind of last minute. But now I'm actually speaking over the booth like this, and I'm a little bit hot there. There we go. I'm speaking sort of over the booth. Can you hear the mic stand slipping? Don't try this at home, kids, without the without some sort of a counterweight or ABS strap. But now you can have your copy right over top. And now when you speak in, you're actually sort of speaking right over the top of the microphone. And so it's pretty much impossible to pop the mic because your microphone's right below the range, right below your mouth. It still sounds like you're on mic. You can hear the presence of my voice, and everything sounds very present. But the microphone, and it's about the right distance, too. It's about 6 to 8 inches away. But now I could have my copy right over top and have a very clean, clear field of view with lots of light or whatever of what I need to read without having to try to put it inside the booth, put it in the back, you know, light the copy or do any kind of other, you know, odd positioning or using flashlights or little LED lights to read my copy. And I think the results are quite good. And you can do this in almost any space as long as it's not a super live room. So let's say you have the same rig and you're working in your own, you know, bedroom, and this is all you got. The best thing you can do is open up a closet, which likely will have some clothes hanging in it. Put the closet behind you, so you've got a backstop behind you, and put this in front of you, so your back is to the closet. And you'd be amazed at the results you can get out of this. It really does work well. This in conjunction with some other soft materials is quite remarkable. But in a bigger space, what's nice about working in a larger room and with a lot of good acoustical treatment is that you can actually get quite a bit further away from the microphone and get still a nice, clean, dry, even, and natural sound and have a lot more room to move around. I'm almost a foot away right now. And I can move around, and as long as I'm facing the microphone, I can move around quite a bit. Now, this mic has a pretty wide sweet spot, obviously. It's a cardioid mic. But you have to have a pretty well-treated space or a large space to do this. The room I'm in right now is about 10 or 12 by 12, and it has a, what do you call it? Not a cathedral ceiling, but a...
Yeah, it's a cathedral.
When it goes up on an angle. And that helps a lot. Yeah, that helps a lot. It keeps the room from reverberating, keeps the ceiling from echoing sound back at me. But it lets me work the microphone at a much larger distance, which especially if you're doing animation stuff where you want to feel animated and be able to move around, you have the luxury of doing that. But, you know, that's one of the big advantages of being in a larger space. You know, you get that flexibility of being able to move a little bit more, move around more, not have to be locked in right in front of the microphone at this one specific spot the whole time. And it still gives you a very nice, even, and natural sound. And do you think you can even achieve this in a really small booth, Dan? Is that even possible?
In a small booth?
Yeah.
Well, what do you mean by that?
Well, like a closet, like a 4x4 closet or something.
Well, I use a 4x4 closet. And
how far away can you get from the mic where before it really starts to sound, I don't know, boxy?
All right, well, let's find out.
Yeah, let me see it.
Let's go in there and actually do it.
I think you can do it, can't you?
I can. I just changed the input.
Let's try it out.
Take my tether here.
He's got that long headphone cable.
All right.
You think we rehearsed this too? We didn't rehearse this. This is right off the cuff.
We do this all the time anyway. But you know, you can see I've got my chair set at this level.
Now Skype wants to take a dump. So Skype is chopping you up into little bits right now, Dan. You're completely it's completely falling apart. So I'm gonna call Dan back right now. Skype is so fun. All right. Calling him back right now. He's going to run back over and answer. All right, let's try this again, Dan.
All right. My camera on?
No, it's not on.
Looks like it is.
Yep, not seeing it. Should we try call you back one more time? Okay. Maybe I was just too quick on the draw. I didn't give Skype a chance to line up all the electrons. Let's see. All right.
There we go.
Now we're talking. All right, let's try that again.
Now we're talking turkey here.
Or Apollo 13 has launched. Yes.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yes, sir.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, close the door. Let's hear what it sounds like, you know, door shut.
All right. Also, another commercial here for Studio Suit. No, this is inside my booth, and as you can hear, it's really dead. I am 5 to 7 inches from my mic, and as I move away, you can hear that, you know, it doesn't change the acoustics in here too much. It's even all the way around.
No, it's pretty good. It's pretty good. I mean, yeah, I mean, again, without proper treatment in a small room, it's really tough to be able to move that far from a mic and not start getting too much low-mid resonance.
Right. And as you can see, I've got it set so the mic is always right above my eye level, about the bridge of my nose.
Yeah.
And but, you know, as you move about the room, there's just no reverberation in here.
And that's Dan's on a Neumann TLM 103. For those who, somebody did it, just asked Suzanne. That's what he's on. So so there you go.
Back here to my other mic.
Switch mics. Okay. So, you know, large rooms are great if you can get them. If you can get a room in your home or in your, you know, that you can find that's quiet enough to get away with to do the work you're doing, and also. And then, you know, enough acoustical treatment to dampen the space around you, you really get some incredible flexibility. That's why you see a lot of voiceover professional studios where it's not necessarily a tiny booth. Sometimes it's a large studio with maybe a couple of what they call gobos or baffles that they set up behind you just to break up the reverberation a little bit. And it's so amazing how great it sounds. It's so open and you can be sometimes even 2 feet away from the microphone, and it still sounds sweet, you know. So that's the beauty of larger spaces.
And we're finding with Studio Suit that you can do it in a smaller space or a medium-sized space. So,
well, which you can do with a large space, even with the Studio Suit, you could actually hang a track right up around you and sort of like make like a tent or a U or something around you,
like a hospital curtain.
Yeah, kind of like a hospital, like a divider or a hospital curtain. You can kind of make that quasi booth room in a room thing, and but you still have the openness of the space around you in the room. So the low frequency stuff can pass through the Studio Suit or any whatever material you're using and sort of dissipate around in that larger space. And you don't get that boxiness, boominess. You know, that's what we're always battling that low to low mid range frequency. That's the stuff that always creates mud.
Yeah, we have an example of that later on in the show, too.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Interesting little case study.
That's it. I've exhausted my brain. So the rest of the show, it's up to you, Dan. You got to carry it.
Well, I took a couple of notes, so I'm all set to go.
Good.
We've got J.S. Gilbert coming up in just a couple of minutes, so you want to stay tuned for that. You do not want to miss him. We're going to have a great time with him. Tip of the week is coming up. We've got to pick some... a very interesting studio, as we just mentioned, and your questions, too. So stay tuned to East West Audio Body Shop. We'll be right back. God bless.
voila, this is East West Audio Body Shop with Dan Leonard in the East and George Whittam in the West. Merci. Et maintenant, back to the show.
Bonjour. Now I feel like I should be wearing my beret.
One of our lovely fans sent that in to us.
Yes. Thank you very much for that. Mm-hmm. And now it is time for...
Where did that thing go anyway?
It's somewhere.
I got too many video clips in here, man. One of these days I will get this transition. Here we go.
Just sit back and relax. It's time for some announcements.
All right.
Loving it.
Yes. You talk about seat of your pants. That's this show.
That's right.
But never panic. Never panic. It always works one way or another.
Not anyway. 60% of the time, it works every time.
Yeah. EWAB memberships, $39.95 a month. Just do it. Okay. We'd like to thank our donors. You guys are great. We really appreciate it. We're doing this by the skin of our teeth, and we really appreciate your support. And if you'd like to make a donation to help us keep those commercials off of here, not our commercials, but the national spots that interrupt our show, you can go right above George's head there where it says donate if you're in the ewabs.net webpage. And you can click on that. You can donate to us there. So please do that.
And by the way, ewabs.net is the domain right now. Ewabs.com, amazingly enough, is not working at the moment, which I'm working on. So if you're trying to figure out where is ewabs.com, why does it say it's down? Just go over to ewabs.net.
.net. Yeah. Of course, if you're that, you're not even listening. Right. You're not even hearing that.
Well, I mean, you might be watching this on YouTube after the fact. So
that's true too.
Most of you do watch it in replay or listen to it on our podcast, which, thanks to Lee Penny, one of our members and fans, actually has helped us get the podcast back online on iTunes. So it's a few episodes behind. We're taking some time to get caught up. But if you do enjoy consuming the show in audio form while you're driving around or vacuuming or doing the laundry or taking a shower, yes, actually taking a shower. I actually listen to podcasts in the shower. It's pretty cool, and you can grab it on our website or go to iTunes, the iTunes store, and type in EWABS and find it over there.
All righty. We'd like to thank Anthony Gettig tonight. He's monitoring our chat room and will be taking your questions down and relaying them to us. He's going to yell real loud from Kalamazoo, and one of us will probably hear him. And Lee Penny, of course, for some of the production assistance we've been doing in here. Voiceover World in Toronto, Saturday, May 4th. Check out Voice World Toronto. The website is voiceworldtoronto.com. Go there. It's going to be a great time. I'm going to be there for that. However, I'm going to miss FAF Camp.
Oh, yeah.
However, Studio Suit will be there, along with Studio Tux and Studio Tie, guys, for those of you who are wondering.
Sweet.
But, yeah, but I'm going to miss that. I'm going to be up at Voice World Toronto, so if you want to go to that, you can go to that. However, we'd like to see people at FAF Camp, too. And if you go to the FAF Camp website and use the promo code WOVO, when you buy your FAF Camp All Access Pass, those of us at World Voices Organization will waive your $25 application fee.
Oh, nice. So,
yeah. So, plus Bubbles, who I guess is Faffy's dolphin friend, will match that with $25 off your registration. And so there's a little bit of incentive to you to join WOVO and go to FAF Camp.
Nice. Thank you, guys. Thank you, FAF Camp, for helping out WOVO, helping giving that some traction.
Yeah, so you can go over to www.fafcamp.com and tell them we sent you. Studio Suit, we did the update. It works. You heard it for yourself.
Yep.
And what else? Oh, make sure you like us on
Facebook and subscribe to us on YouTube to never miss a show, and Twitter. We're not doing a lot on Twitter yet. We're working on it, but we are on there. We do let people know the show's airing. And so, you know, I try to make sure we get posts on there once a week to tell people what's going on with the show and when we're about to go on the air.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
All righty. Well, it's time for the tip of the week. And Now, I will give you a little bit of forewarning on this. I was having a bit of a bad mustache day. You know, I can't always see exactly what I look like, and you know, it might just be the camera angle too. So anyway, I'll talk a little bit about the iPad. So let's roll that.
About a year ago, I boldly made a prediction that within 2 years, all of our voiceover recording work could probably be done on a tablet. Well, fortunately, I still have 12 months to make that happen. So in order to make that happen, I'm going to show you a couple of ways that you can use an iPad or a tablet type of computer to do a lot of your recording work. And that includes recording and reading your copy. I find the iPad absolutely amazing. There's nothing you can't do with it. There are more apps than you can shake a stick at, if that's your idea of a good time. We've talked about having a remote screen in your booth that you can remotely control to have your copy. But with an iPad, you have a couple more options that are really, really cool. Because you can have it with you, you can control your recording, and you can also mark your copy with a couple of great programs, one of which is called Fourscore. Fourscore is a great program because it allows you to just move your pages by simply touching the screen. But here's the other thing that it does that's really, really cool. It allows you to mark your copy. Everybody asks about that. So if you have copy and you want to be able to, say, make marks to emphasize certain things, or maybe to highlight them, which is another option. You have lots of choices. So now, all you have to do is mark up your copy, and it's there, and it's all on your iPad. We waited for a lot of microphones to interface with the iPad directly, and now we have them. The Epigee mic's been out for about a year. You know how I love that. There's also the Blue Digital Sparky, which has gotten great reviews. Focusrite has a new machine called the iTrack that will directly interface with your iPad. So you have lots of choices in which to record with. And what recording program should you use? Well, you know my favorite is Twisted Wave. It makes it super simple. Let me show you. Twisted Wave allows you to do all sorts of great things. All you have to do is set it up, always record in mono, and then just start reading your copy. Tablets allow interactive content not possible with PDF or flipbook editions. Tablet editions of your publications can include slideshows, movies, audio, or other touch-based interactive content. You can continue to publish the non-interactive version of your periodicals as a PDF or a flipbook while expanding into the tablet platform. Stop, and all we have to do is edit. So editing with it is very simple. We know we have the boops there. You touch this, where you make your mistake, cut it. Same thing here. Tablets allow interactive content not possible with PDF or flipbook editions. Publications can include slideshows, movies, audio, or other touch-based interactive content. Continue to publish the non-interactive version of your periodicals as a PDF or a flipbook while expanding into the tablet platform. The other thing about Twisted Wave is that you have a bank of effects you can use. Amplify, normalize, a fade in, a fade out, silence, inserting silence, some filters like a high pass filter and a low pass filter. But also you have a dynamics processor, which I have set up as a noise gate. Special settings on that. And you can also convert the sampling rate to whatever rate you need that to be at. Now, the other thing is, how do you get it from one place to another? And here you can see you can export the audio to iTunes, to an FTP, send an email to somebody. You can also send it to a Dropbox, which is real easy to do. You just upload the sound. It's connected automatically with your Dropbox. And voila, you can send it to anybody, give them the address to the Dropbox, or whatever. So the technology certainly exists to make it happen for you in your studio. If all you have is an iPad, you can actually get away with it. But still remember, the most important thing is the acoustic environment in which you record. 90% of the quality of your audio is dependent on that. And that's my tip of the week.
Yeah, I failed to mention there this great little device, which is where I learned about Fourscore and how you spell it. I don't know. Actually, I was having trouble finding it on the web store, the app store over at Apple. But I think it's still available one way or another. Maybe it's just the way I'm spelling it. But our good friend Hugh Sung at AirTurn turned us on to this little device. There's a foot pedal that is a Bluetooth connection to your iPad, so you can just flip pages. If you're doing an audiobook, you don't even have to touch anything. Just touch the, you know, your foot pedal, and it moves and it changes the page for you.
Yeah, so, that's wicked cool.
Yeah. So as the original premise is, you know, I think that the possibility of having your entire recording studio in an iPad is technologically possible. There are little challenges here and there, but I think they'll all get worked out.
Sorry, I just had an iTunes window popped up at random in front of your face just now. Sorry
Come
about
back.
That.
Oh, that's okay.
I was finding the Fourscore link to the app so people could actually read about it. It's a F-O-R, score, F-O-R-C-S-C-O-R-E. So there you go.
All right. All right. Well, you think we've had fun so far. We got a great guest coming up. J.S. Gilbert will be joining us right here in East West Audio Body Shop in just a minute. So stay right where you are, because we'll be right back.
VO Studio Tech. Recording made simple.
Hi, I'm Peter McHugh.
This is Jim Tasker from Los Angeles, California.
Hi, this is Bill Ratner in Los Angeles.
Hi, this is Scott Rummel here in Yorba Linda, California.
Hi, my name is Rick Wasserman.
Hi, this is Tom Kane.
Hi, my name is Vanessa Marshall.
Hi, my name is Zurich.
Hi, I'm Mary McKittrick.
Randy Thomas chiming in.
Hi, this is Joe Szymanski.
Hey, this is Rick Robles.
Hi, my name is John Patrick Armstrong.
I was turned on to George by none other than Don LaFontaine, who always swore by his health.
George is absolutely awesome.
ISDN, Source Connect, Phone Patch, FTP, you name it, Georgia set it up.
It's really the best thing I've ever done for myself. I feel free, safe, fearless, like anything is possible in here.
Unless you like to look for opportunities to waste time, call George.
And he did all of that, long distance over the phone and the internet.
I'm very happy with George, and I cherish him.
Thanks, George. You make it easy.
And now, back to East West Audio Body Shop, where every week, it's Apollo 13.
And this week is no exception, to tell you the truth. Have you got that intro video all set up there, George?
I do.
Let's roll that, and then we'll introduce our guest.
Who's J.S. Gilbert?
J.S. Gilbert, what's that?
J.S. Gilbert. I don't know who J.S. Gilbert is. J.S. Gilbert, he's dead to me.
Who's J.S. Gilbert?
What's the guy's name?
Who is J.S. Gilbert?
You don't know who you're talking about.
I don't even know who that is.
J.S. Gilbert, you tell me.
No, we never heard of that guy. Did you play for the Niners? No.
Jeez. And so funny, you know that guy?
The bullfighter.
The bullfighter?
No, never heard of him.
It's J.S. Gilbert. Did you just know? No, J.S. Gilbert, sorry.
Oh, who is he? A race car driver?
I have no idea, but I'll look it up.
If you're in San Francisco, you know who J.S., what's his name? Oh, I'm just kidding, he's a San Francisco legend. The man's a legend, he's like a god around here. Who's that?
You know who J.S. Gilbert is, of course.
Yeah, I know.
You do?
Yeah.
Who is he?
I don't know who you're talking about.
Have you guys visited J.S. Gilbert's house yet?
No.
We have not, but it's on our list of to-dos.
To-do.
It's a bucket list.
Do you know who J.S. Gilbert is, right?
I'm not too familiar, but I've heard it once or twice.
The name's big, like I see it everywhere.
Did they ever ask you about J.S. Gilbert?
Some people do, but not very many.
Do you ever get an idea of who J.S. Gilbert was?
Sometime I do, sometime I don't. Depend if they know and educate about it and educate me.
Who the f*** is J.S. Gilbert?
So now we get to ask the question, who is J.S. Gilbert? And here he is. Welcome to East West Audio Body Shop.
Gentlemen, how are things going this evening? I've been enjoying watching.
Good.
Yeah, well, we have a good time doing the show. But we've been waiting to have you on for some time because you got a lot to say.
It's sometimes too much to say, actually. I think that could be my problem. It's the foot and mouth disease that I suffer from a great deal. Yeah. Trying to figure out where to watch you. Let's see. Okay, I'll view you over there. Then I can look and I can see comments over here.
Yeah, right. One of the worst things to do is try to do what you're doing, which is actually try to watch everything.
You will get lost. So look in the camera. Look in the camera.
Look in the camera. Okay.
Thanks for coming on today. How is things in San Fran tonight?
It was fun when I was on the show at the FAFCON. That was a lot of fun. A lot of incredible energy and as people know, I do watch your show and occasionally live. I get a chance to watch it live. Most Sunday nights I have a family commitment though.
Mm-hmm.
So they're upstairs. It's movie night. My brother-in-law comes over.
So do we, actually. We blow off our family commitment every Sunday night, actually.
There you go. Well, that's a good thing to do, I suppose.
Yes.
You know what you did not show when you were talking about the interfaces for the Mac, iPad?
Yeah.
Is my favorite little device right here. Can you see it?
Oh, ooh. Yes. The digital. Yes.
How do you say that thing? iAudio.
iAudio Interface 2. Yeah. It is the size of a pack of cigarettes. It has a built-in lithium-ion rechargeable battery in it. And among other things, look at that. It has digital audio out.
Yes, it does.
Incredible. So this little thing here, and I can bring any microphone I like. I like either the Octava 319. That I have that with the Mike Jolly mod on it, and it's a great travel mic because it doesn't pick up the room. Or the Sennheiser 416 is the other mic that I like for traveling with as well. Neither of them pick up the room, and this thing, it is amazing. The sampling rate that I get off of this.
Oh yeah. Well, that thing was designed for room analysis. Originally, but it works great as an interface. So,
it's got incredible the I/O the DAC actually is really incredible.
Yeah,
and I will also say for $150 the Focusrite
iTrack
is unbelievable, and you can use that on a Mac or a PC as well, which is great.
Yep.
And that's got a really the mic pre on it's really clean. It's really nice for $150. I mean, it's pretty incredible.
That seems to be the price point to be now. If you can make a really good interface that works with iPad, Mac, and PC for $150, that's the magic price point. I know that thing you have, the iAudio interface, is more expensive.
This was $400. So right. Yeah, I tend to have the toys in here. I tend to have are a little bit higher end. I people ask me all the time why I have, if you look behind me, you'll see I have six or seven mic pre's and this is only a stereo, my room is stereo. I tell people it's one channel more than I actually need. And to be quite honest at this point in the game, I think the reason why a lot of us have gear like this is just because we can. There's so much good, relatively inexpensive stuff out there, but I don't know. I do think there's a lot of rationale, at least if you're in California, for having a Cine 416 and also a U87. And the reason why I like having those is because those are the mics that are used in professional studios when I go out. So if I ever have to do a pickup line You know, I get flown into LA sometimes to do work, and I come back, and then they want me to, like, three words or something. So I can do that from my booth, and they can usually patch it in pretty good through ISDN because I have both those mics, and that's 98% of the time when I'm getting mic done when I go to another studio.
Well, anyway. Let's you know, let's ask the question. Who is J.S. Gilbert? One of the first questions was, what does the J.S. stand for? And I figured, well, maybe you'll tell us, maybe you won't.
Well, it's a long story, but basically my mother and father picked the initials out from a couple of relatives, and they never really did agree on a name. And then when I came along, my father was out on a gambling spree, actually, and my mother went to get me out of the hospital. And the nurse said, we can't let a baby go without a name. She said, it's going to be J something, S something. And then they just put that on the birth certificate. Said, you can always, you know, do an adjustment later on. The funny thing about it is that when I grew up, everybody in my family called me Kid, because my mother was the baby of the family. And so I was the baby of the family. So Kid Gilbert, and he was a boxer, from what I understand, too. So,
yep.
There you go.
That's true.
So that's the JS story. But when I started school, it was a not easy being JS, and around like 5-6 years old. So to make life easy, my mother said, "Just your name's going to be Johnny." And so I went Johnny for a long time. And then I think it might have been 7th grade. We were going on some sort of a trip somewhere. The English teacher, who was also in charge of the school paper, was taking us, and you had to bring in your birth certificates. And he's like, what? Your name is J.S.? How cool is that? And he told me I shouldn't be Johnny anymore. So I kind of changed it.
And the rest is history.
I think he was right.
The funny thing, though, is I'm having issues right now with Homeland Security, who insists that I have a name. That just adds to the mystique, I think.
Yeah. It probably does.
Is James Gilbert?
Yes. Well, one of the things we know you're doing is lately you've been doing a lot of video game voices. You know, spend a lot of time on this, but tell us a little bit about some of the video game work you're doing.
Well, I think a lot of people just know me for video game work or associate me with that. If you go in and you Google my name, there's a lot of references to video game work, and that tends to be because that's tracked, at least for the last 6, 7, 8 years, 10 years or so. That type of work is tracked, and there's a lot of fan clubs and different types of groups, people that are really involved in terms of video game work. I actually have been doing video game work now for over 20 years. So I was an original voice. I was one of the first 25 people to probably have their voice on a video game. Back in the old Atari 2600, Commodore 64 days, I got brought into Atari when they were developing the original codecs for audio to be on games. And so I did voices for that stuff. And then all the early libraries for all the different game designers and manufacturers have all my stuff on it. So
were you a 4-bit voice at one point?
I don't know if it was 4-bit, it was 8-bit,
but eight bit,
way back. So any of the baseball, football, basketball games before Madden, before any of that stuff, I'm the guy who says, first and goal to go!
Did you happen to say, B-17 Bomber?
Don't remember that.
That was in television. That was going way back.
I remember Oral Hershiser's Strike Zone. Was that you?
No, would have probably been like, you know, baseball 96 or NFL, NHL that. Hockey 95 or something like that. Those were some of the early games. I was on the original Tekken.
I play
the bad guy on the original Tekken. I'm also the bad guy and the good guy on the original Battle Toshinden. I was the original voice of Mario, Mario Brothers. And it really pisses off the guy who is the voice to actually know that I did that before he did. But there was the first time that Mario's voice ever appears in a game was on Mario's Time Machine. And I did like a ton of voices for that, including Mario. He doesn't say much. And the producers of that game did not get along well with the people at Nintendo. And from what I understand, they did not know who the people, who the talent was on that game. And so a year or so later, when they held open casting for the voice of Mario, they were just looking for somebody who sounded like the Mario that they had before.
Well, how about that? So you were the prototype.
So, yeah, that's about that. You know, probably I've probably been on around 300 titles now. And the thing is, I would say probably as far as the video game industry is concerned, nobody cares.
Right.
They really, you know, it's like they just don't care. I get scripts still sent to me and I audition for them and I, you know, I book some stuff and I don't book other stuff. But, you know, I think there was a big difference 10 years ago, 12 years ago, 15 years ago. I was part of a group of maybe 30, 40 guys that just did all the voices on all the games we tended to. And now it's changed. I mean, everybody wants to be a voice on a video game. Everybody does.
Mm-hmm.
But the big thing that I've got is Twisted Metal Black. I am the voice of Sweet Tooth. Is considered to be probably the nastiest character to ever be in a game. And I did his voice originally 13 years ago for Twisted Metal Black. And then I resurrected the voice again about a year and a half ago when I got a call from David Jaffe, the creator of the game. And he said, we're doing a Twisted Metal for PS3. And anyway, I'm kind of looking at, while I'm talking to you, I'm looking at some of the stuff from the folks in the peanut gallery, How do you have time to do all the responses you do on strings that appear on LinkedIn groups? Like
we're going to get into that. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll get into that. Anyway, I'll finish up here real quick on the game stuff. So I got to do the voice again, and he is probably my favorite character that I've ever done in a video game. For those of you who aren't familiar with Sweet Tooth, he is a clown. He has been cursed, and his hair is on fire. He drives around in an ice cream truck. And he is a homicidal maniac who likes to kill little girls. So he says things like, boys and girls, you would have been so proud of me. I looked for her in all the places that I thought she could hide. But there was one place I thought she might be. So I saved that for last. And what do you know? It was like opening a box of Cracker Jacks and getting the best prize of all.
That is nasty.
That's bad. Such clean, wholesome American fun.
Yeah, it is. It is. So, yes, I am that guy that like, all the mothers are just hold me down and pistol whip me. Damn, beat him because he's a bad influence on our kids. Beat him.
Give me that damn controller.
And then Sweet Tooth got to come back again. Some of you may have played Sony All-Stars Battle Royale, where I get to kick butt on the guy from God of War. So,
ooh, such virtual fun.
I just reinforced Ann Richardson's cloud phobia. Now the big one, though, and here's the thing. I actually did a little like shout out to the fans of a game that I do several of the voices on, and my system crashed. My site crashed. They said there were 250,000 page load attempts in 4 hours, and that is League of Legends. So it's supposed to be the most played game of all time, and I do some of the characters on there. So I don't know if any of the people in the gallery play League of Legends, but I am Dr. Mundo, among others. Mundo, who is known for Mundo will do as Mundo pleases.
You mean like this guy here?
Price for being so popular. Mundo likes saying Mundo. Mundo likes phone saying Mundo. Why not everybody say Mundo?
Why not everybody say Mundo? And that is a question for the ages. So, anyway, the video you guys saw, all that really is that the Who is J.S. Gilbert, it's designed for people to see that video and then Google my name. That's really all that was about. And it works fairly well. So it's kind of like a little part of a marketing campaign that I do.
Good idea. Yeah. Somebody may be stealing that right about now.
That's okay. Because my Gilbertism for today on my Twitter, my Facebook, which is the JS Gilbert Facebook.com/ Gilbertarian, because somebody took Gilbertism.
Well,
yeah, I know. You would think J.S. Gilbert is kind of cool, actually, because there's only like four of us. But then all of a sudden, some kid popped out of the woodwork, and he's this writer out of Texas, and he's also kind of like a right winger. And his name is Jonathan Gilbert, but he wants to call himself J.S. Gilbert. And I'm a writer. I've been writing longer than I've been doing voiceover. So if you're looking for me on Google, I am not the volcanologist, nor am I the baby doctor, and I'm not the Republican writer from Texas.
That narrows it down.
Yeah. Yeah. The only other Dan Leonard in the world is the world's top luxury yacht designer.
Wow.
We
exist. Does he have a mustache?
No, he doesn't.
Okay.
He's much better looking than I am. He's actually Croatian, I think. But anyway, one of the interesting things about you is that you've been doing this a long time. I mean, there's a lot of us that were in the broadcasting business, but you've been doing voiceover a long time. You made the transition from when it was going to the studio and it was a much smaller cadre of people into this new internet business, and you've been able to continue to thrive there. And
I make so much money, it's just an ungodly thing.
Yeah, I know, but
and if you want to learn how to make the big bags of cash, just come on down and I'll be teaching that workshop next week. No, you know, the thing about it is I started out kind of in a position to make relationships with folks that were in the ad industry. And I've got a lot of things in my past that I've done. Before I learned how to do studio audio, I actually was a concert and special event promoter. So I can pretty much handle any job that is required. I can build stages and gaff and rig. I've worked front of house. I've set up cameras and run cameras. I've been a video switcher. So, you know, from my life and working in nightclubs and special events and concerts, what happened a number of years ago in the Bay Area was the ad agencies were looking to target individuals that could work with their clients in creating these big extravaganzas that used to take place. You know, so I was asked to go work on things for clients for like, you know, E3 and just huge events, block parties, things of that nature. I worked on the West Coast Computer Fair way back when. So a lot of those kinds of things. And the more I got in tight with the advertising folks, the more I started doing other things. And before you knew it, I was writing and producing and doing a whole bunch of other stuff in the advertising world. And then that led to me doing voiceovers. I actually was responsible. One of the first jobs I ever did is pretty funny. It was about 25 years ago. I had gone into a studio and I was responsible for producing concert lines. You know, those this Saturday at the Arco Arena, it's the Allman Brothers with their hit Jessica. You know, mm-hmm. You know, get your tickets now at Ticketmaster or the yeah. So and then I would get somebody from the radio station. They would do it and I'd bring back the cassettes, and that was that. And one day, I don't know what happened. The talent was either drunk or hungover or whatever. And so there I was in the room, and the question became, well, what are you going to do? You need another talent. And before I really had a chance to try and figure out who to call, the engineer said, you have a nice voice. Why don't you try it? And I sheepishly did. To be quite honest, in those days, there was a big separation between if you were a writer, you wrote. If you were a producer, you produced. If you were a director, you directed. And if you were a talent, you were a talent. And that's how it worked in terms of the ad agency world. There are still a few places that are like that, where if you work for the ad agency, you cannot be in or do voices for their commercials. And, you know, quite frankly, I think there's something wonderful about saying, I'm going to call a really good plumber when I need plumbing done. I'm going to call a really good electrician when I need electrical work done. I'm going to have a producer. I'm going to have a director, so on and so forth.
Sure, sure.
And I think that's a lot got a lot to do with the breakdown in many respects, the quality of work that's being done today. You know, you get these guys that way too many people have the DIY mentality and just feel like there's nobody else is necessary in the project. So anyway, that was the beginning of sort of my career as doing voiceover was that day because the producers said, you keep doing the voice. Because that way they got to avoid paying the talent fee to the radio station guys. So
the irony.
Here's the funny thing about it is almost 25 years to the day from doing that first job, it was for the Jefferson Starship. I got hired about a year and a half ago by BBD&O to do a voiceover for a concert line for Harris, and it was for the Jefferson Starship.
It's amazing how those things are so cyclical. So what do you think is really the state of our business these days? Now, you and I, we run into each other on these forums, and we have a pretty good time because we know there's a lot of morons out there who have a tendency to write an awful lot of stuff. And
you know what? There were a few morons, and I think that there were a lot of people out there that are just putting their trust in the wrong places. I think there are a lot of people who are misguided. I think that there are a lot of people who hear what they want to hear. And it was a lot easier for me 7 or 8 years ago for me to tell people, don't get into voiceover. You know, only 5% of the people that are even at SAG and AFTRA that have representation make over $10,000 a year, you know. And to be able to say these things to people. But now, sadly, I'm saying them to people who are saying, well, what the heck should I do? I've been looking for a job for a year or 2 years. And I hate to say this because when you get into voiceover, you are a sole proprietorship business. You are a business. And I think the last rationale for somebody to open up a business is because they can't find a job. It drives me crazy. I got into voiceover, by the way, and I made that transition to deciding I was going to do what I'm doing, I had a lot of money in the bank. I had a lot of support systems set up. I pretty much knew what I was in for. I put together a business plan. I put together a marketing plan. And in the early days, when there was nobody to actually communicate with, there wasn't. I went out and I actually paid producers and directors and audio engineers and other professionals to let me take them to lunch and to actually pick their mind. And 20 years ago, I started a program called the Talent Forum, where we would bring these people in and we'd pay them. And I brought in folks like Scott DeVinny, who was the VP with SAG-AFTRA, and he did a whole thing on, you know, why you'd want to be union or not union and trends and stuff that was going on. And that's what I see really is happening. I want people to know, I don't want people to think the way I think. I just think, I don't want you to think the way I think. You should be thinking differently than the way you think.
Ah, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
So what about experience though? I mean, we've talked about this, that, you know, someone who's been in the business a long time. Now you've been in the business a long time. I've been in the business a long time. Does that really mean anything anymore?
No. And here's a couple of things I can tell you. One, I'm not as good an actor today as I was probably 6 or 7 years ago. It's really simple. I'm in a vacuum. I'm in a room. I'm in a booth. Life happens. I'm older. I'm going to more doctor's appointments. I don't have the organic way of the process that things happened back even just 7 or 8 years ago, organically. When I first started out, we auditioned at ad agencies and we auditioned at clients. We'd go in, usually like there was a conference room, there'd be a little tape recorder set up. And it's different. When you're looking in the eyes of somebody who maybe wrote the spot or at least was part of the creative brief, and you can go in there and you can ask them questions and you got directed. It was such an organic process to getting to a place where you could trust what you're doing and you knew what people wanted. And nowadays, I mean, you know, I get an audition and you think to yourself, wow, if I don't read this in the first half hour, is anybody even going to hear it? And da, 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 and all this other stuff that goes on. And, you know, so I do an okay job, I guess. But the other thing, too, is, and why I think almost any coach will work, and it's an audience. We feed off of audiences, even if it's just a booth operator or the person that's running the director. You know, at that point, you've got an audience. I have 6 agents, somebody just asked. But I really only have, I get auditions sent to me by 4 of the agents. The other 2, I don't really do much with. Anyway, get back to that. Where was I?
Your train of thought got derailed.
Yeah, well, you know, I think I have ADHD and other stuff going on too. So,
I know how it goes, man.
No,
I'm
but
just like
talking
that.
About it being an organic process,
right?
And the thing, it's always kind of been one of those things that it's like the Actor's Studio. You know, do you know Jack Nicholson actually had to, like, he couldn't get 8 times, I think, he tried to get into the Actor's Studio for training. You know, banging down the door. And so there is this ease of entry getting into voiceover now and a very non-organic process. And I hate to say it, but most of the coaches out there, from what I have personally experienced, they're not in touch with what's going on in terms of, well, first let's back it up a minute and say there is no voiceover industry. And when you figure that out, then you're ahead of the game, because what it is we are service providers to a lot of different industries. And the thing that we have in common is that those industries employ people to perform on a microphone. But if you are looking at getting into doing commercial work, you know, there are all kinds of levels of doing commercial work. You know, these days, the national spots. So I'm, you know, I have national SAG spots that run. I'm the voice of Phillips Petroleum. I'm the voice of Clorox bathroom products. I'm a voice of, I was Chevrolet in a couple of different states, Chevy trucks, and things of that nature. But what's happening now is when those scripts are coming in, they're being outsourced. They're going through places like Voice Bank. And I have 6 agents, 4, you know, 4 of whom the semi auditions. I can get the same script from 4 agents in 1 day. Well, that makes me wonder how many of the, you know, 200 agents that are on Voice Bank are going to be reading all their people for this.
Yeah, there was a lot of that this week.
What's that?
There was a lot of that this week, actually.
Well, you know, it's just after a while you start wondering and you say, well, what are my chances going to be? You know, I've been on the other side of the glass. I've worked with the ad agents, agencies. I've been in there when the castings have come in. I don't know anybody that's listened to over 100 auditions for a gig, personally. It may happen. In fact, I ran into a writer the other day who basically, you know, I'd asked him, he wrote McDonald's stuff for a while. And I asked him, I said, how do you figure out whose stuff to listen to? And he said, well, you know, I'll be honest with you. His wife belonged to one particular agency, And he said, I would just listen to theirs. You know, we always hired from them. So I said to him, you mean I auditioned for McDonald's for 2 years and you never listened to my audition? He said, no. I said, nobody ever heard any of my auditions. He said, no. And the last time I checked, it's pretty much impossible to get any work if you're auditioning and nobody hears your audition.
I'd say. Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. Know, interesting
it's
thing.
It's all changing. Everything about what we're doing is changing. The other thing too is, you know, back in the tape days, it was expensive to do auditions. People would book your demos tended to mean a lot more than they do now, and people would book you off your demos, or at least shortlist you off demos. That doesn't go on a whole lot, at least not for me anymore. So, you know. It's tough for me to be very positive to people about voiceover, because it's sort of like I come from a place where, you know, the streets were running with milk and honey, and maybe they don't quite so much anymore. But saying that, I mean, yes, there are people that go out there every day and manage to figure out ways to make money in this business, and that will continue to happen. It's always been a really tough road, but, you know, again, if you know what you're up against going into it, then I think you got a chance. But when you're in a position where it gets to that point where, you know, you're looking at the audition as a bag of groceries or, you know, paying your rent or that kind of thing, I think that's really, it's a tough place to be. And I'm glad it's a place I'm not.
Yeah. So what's a typical day like for you? How much, what's the variety of work you're doing?
Well, there's a hot tub right outside my office. I don't know if you can see it. It's just right outside the door there.
Oh, I see it bubbling away.
As much time there as I can. Big. You know, everybody's got a different way of setting a business model. I tend not to do a lot of long form stuff. I'm about trying to make relationships. And in fact, it says on my board, you need advocates, people who have a vested interest hiring specifically you. And this is where I think maybe the internet fails and a lot of other things fail, because, again, having done this for as long as I have, having been on both sides of the glass, and being somebody who gets into everybody's business, I know the stories of a lot of people out there, the big names. And I can tell you, people don't get from point A to point B in most cases that easily. So you've got huge names out there making big bucks teaching the classes, but they don't tell people that they lived with somebody who was a producer, or that they started out in radio and one of their producers and best friends in radio made it up the ladder in TV and got to be a bigwig over at a network, or things of that nature.
It's all about relationships.
Those are the things you're not hearing.
Yep. Absolutely.
But those are the true stories, and that's how a lot of people out there are getting work. And I did a couple of podcasts for Voices. I wouldn't pee on them if they were on fire. But anyway, they're good podcasts. And, you know, what it really talks about is all the low-hanging fruit out there. That's another thing about voice actors. They get into this business, the first thing they want to do is cold call. I worked for a guy for 2 years over at, Walgreens. Walgreens drugstores. I used to go in every week or two and record stuff. And then one day there was a snafu. We wound up going to lunch, and I'm talking to him and basically find out he's the brother-in-law of a voice actor. And he didn't know his brother-in-law was a voice actor.
Jeez.
You know, I'm picking somebody else's low-hanging fruit. Unfortunately, when I made him aware that his brother-in-law was a voice actor, guess who started doing my work?
You could hear that one coming around the corner.
Yeah. And yeah. So it's the same thing with video games these days. I mean, you have no idea how many of the people who are working at the games companies are doing voices for the video games. How many of the dialogue directors jump in and try and do as much voice work as they can. It's amazing. You know, 6-7 years ago when I got on LinkedIn, I started inviting all my clients to be on LinkedIn with me. And maybe about half joined me and about half didn't. And little by little, over the last 2 years or so, they've been dribbling on, accepting that invitation that I sent out like 6 or 7 years ago now. And suddenly, guess what? Hey, JS, I'm doing voiceover.
Yeah.
And I don't know how it is, you know, where other people are, but I went to one of the events that we have here. It's called the Real Directory. It's kind of like, was it in L.A.? It's called 411. Do they still have that? George?
Yeah, I think so. LA 411. I've never been involved with it, but I've seen
it. Yeah, but it's basically this directory that has all the people who are involved in everything from, you know, camera operators to directors, all that kind of stuff. And I go to this party, right? And I'm shaking hands with people, and I do a lot of different things still. I do write commercials and I produce and what have you. I've had some physical limitations, which is why I won't see you guys at any of the FAF stuff or whatever. I've got torn rotator cuff and tennis elbow, and I just got an epidural for my back, and I had the surgery last year that you know about, Dan. Anyway, you don't have your health, you don't have anything, but I can't really travel a whole lot, and I wish I could. And that's also a problem going out and producing, because I can't be on a thank you, everybody saying get well. Doing okay. But I can't go out on a set for like 8 or 10 hours, you know, and run cameras or you know, produce or whatever. It's just tough. But I'll get there soon. I'm getting better.
Yeah. So and if you're home a lot, that probably gives you the opportunity to write these long threads on some of the forums.
Yeah. So I do some work, and then I take a break and I go on the internet and I write.
I've
been writing since I was published when I was 16 years old, the first time in the New York Daily News, first thing I ever wrote for publication or first thing I ever submitted. And I was a contributing editor, Create Magazine, for 2 years, a few years back, that I don't know, people don't know. So writing is my love. Linda Joy actually was kind enough when I was asking people, you know, what should I talk about today? And she was saying, you always stand out as such a great articulate, actually something to say kind of writer. I think probably when it comes to what I try to write about, look in the threads and look online, and what you'll see is you'll see people who give opinion. You'll see people who just say stuff. And I always, when possible, try to cite a source, give some sort of factual reference or anything that I can. It's always sort of, you don't have to believe me, but if it makes sense, then go with it. You know, and that's how I try to approach it. And, you know, I love being in that booth just as much as anybody else out there does. But honestly, if being a voice talent created a situation for me where I had to wake up every day not knowing if I was going to eat or not eat or you know, those kinds of issues and problems and so on and so forth, then what's the point? You know, there's a lot of things that I could love doing. And I'll be honest with you. If I were a younger man now, let's just say I was 30 years old now, and looking at things that I could do, I doubt the voiceover would be in the list. The return on investment for marketing and promotions and stuff like that is relatively small compared to what it used to be. In fact, in 1996, I had a book. It was called The Interactive Guide to The Guide to Interactive Production in Northern California. I would pick this thing up and I would call people up and say, hey, are you using audio in your project? And they'd say, yeah. And I said, I'm actually experienced in doing nonlinear audio, both voiceover and producing. They'd say, how fast can you get over here? And I was back in that, I was doing a video game a week. Now you see things like people are holding classes, how to make a living doing voices for video games. It is not possible. You cannot make a living doing voices for video games. You can have fun. You can make a few $1,000, but you cannot make a living doing voices for video games. It's just physically not possible.
It's just one thing.
Yeah, it's just one of many, many income streams.
Because, yeah, there are a few video games per year that tend to hire talent for more than just a few days on each video game. Otherwise, you're going to get hired to do a game, whether it's union or non-union, you're going to get $500 to $1,000 per session. How many people are going to do 25 games in a year? So there are literally probably 25, 30 people that don't actually work as dialogue producers who are making more than 25 grand a year doing voices for video games.
Yeah, they've got to be doing something else.
My two best commercials, my two highest grossing commercials, I made more money off of those than I did off of all the 300, 400 video games that I've had my voice on.
Yeah.
So, you know, but if you want to do voices for video games, if it's a goal, if you think it's fun, then great, go ahead and do it. But just be realistic about it, you know.
So, I mean,
that's what I ask people to be. Just don't think you're going to be able to pay your bills and pay the rent and all that kind of stuff. I do League of Legends, the most played game in the country, And I have an NDA signed with them, so I can't really give details. But I'm five of the biggest characters on that game. And it's less than $10,000 a year.
Right. Considering how much money those games make, forget it. It's insane.
Well, whatever.
Yeah. But you're being published. That's the most important thing.
Anyway, I love to write. Writing is my favorite thing to do. It comes naturally to me. The problem is the send button is way too easy to hit.
Yes. I've warned you about that.
Yes.
You know, it's one of those things. It's like when you can learn not to hit send,
it will help you. Type.
I'm getting so much better at it, though.
I'm glad. Yeah, I've noticed. I've noticed. It's
the other thing that's really too is of most of my peers, the people that I know and have worked with, and so on and so forth. Almost none of them, the old school, almost none of them have any kind of presence online whatsoever. And they say, "You're crazy. Why do you write these things? And you get people who don't know what they're talking about, and they make you look bad and all that kind of stuff." And I'll be honest with you. It's a couple of things. One, I am isolated. I told you. It's why I'm not as good an actor. It's why I'm not as good at what I used to do. It just happens. If you're in a vacuum, that's life. I feel sorry for a lot of people who didn't get to have the experiences that I did coming up. I mean, I got to work with incredible talent, incredible people, incredible directors. Like I say, it was a very organic process. It's not so much anymore. But you either adapt or you die. And for me, it still seems to be working, so I'll keep doing it. But, I have no problem with hanging up the VO hat and relying on my other hats if it comes to that day where that's what makes sense.
Yep. Well, JS, it's been fabulous having you with us tonight. You've opened up, you've been honest about things, and people just love hearing this stuff. And when they see you on the forums, they know that they're getting the real deal from somebody who knows what they're talking about. And we really appreciate you coming on tonight.
Thanks. And again, it's not to disappoint people or anything.
Of course,
like
not. No.
The thing here that I think is really, if I can leave somebody with a positive, and that is, it is all about relationships. Here's a story some people have heard. Can I tell 2 minutes?
Go for it.
Hey, man. Okay. No networks breathing down our necks.
Yeah.
All right. I was in a studio this maybe 12, 13 years ago, and I got done doing a gig, and the studio director, they also did a lot of casting and stuff. So I kind of wanted to say hi to her on the way out, and it was a big studio, and I'm turning around the corner and I see her kind of engaged with this woman, you'll forgive me for saying matronly. And it doesn't look like it's going well. So I sort of wave a little bit, and then I kind of am heading for the door, and she yells out, "JS, hang on a second." And so she kind of does one of these things for me to go over, and she says, "Do you have to be anywhere?" And I said, "No, not for a few hours. Why?" And she says, "This is one of my clients, and her talent was supposed to be here 10 minutes ago. He just called, said he's sick and not going to be showing up." And so then she says she's stuck because this thing, it's a spot, and it has to run, and da-da-da. And so she asks, she says, "You've got, you've got, you're paid up, right, blah, 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 and all that." Yeah, okay. So this woman then says to me, "All right, here, let me give you the script and take a few minutes to look it over. And I hope you don't mind. Is this okay? You just give me an audition right here." So I said, "No, that's fine." Well, I look at the script and I realize, I already auditioned for it about 4 days earlier. And obviously I didn't get hired. So I start looking at the script, and I'm saying to myself, "Well, boy, I did a lot of script analysis on it. And sometimes there are a lot of different ways you can interpret a script. But this was kind of one of those, it had sort of really one way that it kind of cried out to be read." And I said, "Well, what, this is all kind of going on in the space of a few seconds in my head. What should I do differently? Why didn't I book it? Blah, blah, blah." And so I thought, well, you know what? I kind of remember what I did for the audition. I feel good in that. Let me just at least do it and give it a starting off point. So I break into the audition. I did it. I look up from the paper and she's standing there. She says, who's your agent? So I said, Stars, this is San Francisco, my agent, Stars. She said, wow. She said, you are so much better than the guy I was going to hire. She says, I don't understand. I sent this to Stars. Why didn't they have you audition for it? Well, the first thought in my mind was, oh my God, Stars didn't send my audition to him. But no, I actually got to see the original audition reel, and sure, I am on it.
Well,
what happened at that point was that woman was motivated to hire me. She became an advocate. She wanted to see me get the job done because it was in her best interest. You know, and it's so funny how that works. There's nothing objective about this business at all. It is completely subjective. I had a client that used to bring me in almost every week for something. It was a husband and wife team. They divorced. The husband kept the business and the wife moved on. And the next time I got called in was about 6 months ago. But then I ran into the wife on the street and she actually asked me out on a date. She was an advocate. She wanted to see me. She liked me. That was a big thing. That's why I got the job.
Well,
so yeah. I think really what it comes down to is that's what it's about. You've got to contact your association from school, your alumni association. Call all the people you know, your insurance agent, your real estate agent. Contact friends of your parents, your kids' parents, friend, you know, and contact these people, but make it a two-way street. What can I do for you? And make it clear, this is what I do. Who do you have a sphere of influence over? Who do you know? It create a situation where you're dealing with advocates, people that you have relationships with. Make the relationship stronger and get into a situation where those people know how they can help you and want to do so.
Advocacy. Absolutely. I love it.
Absolutely. Advocacy, networking, it's all part of it.
Thanks.
It's almost like selling life insurance. JS, thanks for being with us tonight.
Thank you all. Sorry, I know there were a bunch of questions, but and here's the thing. You guys should know. I'm JS Gilbert. What am I? JS Gilbert at PacBell.net. And I'm on Facebook and Twitter and all that kind of stuff. You can feel free. Write me. I will write you back. I will always be as honest as I can. There are a few things maybe I might choose not to comment about. And I've got some NDAs and stuff that prevent me from talking and a few restraining orders. But other than that.
Well, and on that note. Well, thanks for being with us, JS. Yes.
So I'm supposed to go up and hit the donate button right now?
Yeah, actually you are. No, you don't have to.
$100?
We'll ring the bell for that. Anyway, thanks for being with us.
Go ahead. Oh, no, it's coming up $100. Yeah, $100. Okay. I want the rest of those guys to match it.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go. Yeah, all right. That works for us. We'll have one every week that way.
That's it. Just like $10 a piece for you guys.
Thanks, man.
I appreciate it.
You're awesome.
All right. It's JS Gilbert.
We'll be right back after these words, ladies and gentlemen.
VoiceOver Extra, the voiceover industry's online news, education, and resource center 24/7. Hundreds, probably thousands of free how-to articles for voiceover success, ranging from home studio to voice acting to business. A free voiceover industry directory, calendar of industry events, resource links, a store, and much more. Bi-monthly webinars on all topics of voiceover, free subscriptions to newsletters, reports, announcements, daily news, and features at voiceoverextra.com.
Welcome back. We call it EWABS. Dan and George call it the only way to spend Sunday night.
That's for darn sure. And you can't get any better than J.S. Gilbert.
Especially tonight. Holy smokes.
Man, he was on a roll. But that's why we wanted to have him on. The guy knows this business, and he's probably one of the most honest people about what goes on out there. It's about networking. Yeah. It's about relationships, like it is in any business. And he knows that better than anyone because he's been doing it longer than all of us. And so we really appreciate him coming on. You know, somebody else we really appreciate? He's our main sponsor. And he's our main sponsor because we wanted him to be our sponsor because we believe in what he does. And that is getting you the right equipment for what you do. We preach simplicity here. And one of the things that Harlan Hogan and VoiceOver Essentials does is make it easy for you to keep it simple in your studio with some of the great stuff that he has in there. Yeah. What's he featuring this week? Well, you were already showing the Portabooth Pro there earlier on in the show.
I was showing the Portabooth Pro. He's got the new bag for the Portabooth Plus, which I held up last week, but it's on the floor. So if you do have the Portabooth Plus and you really need a better carry bag for that, he is selling this new handsome carry bag for the Portabooth Plus, which I believe is on sale for $59.95.
Worth every penny.
It's got a lot of storage nooks and crannies. You could turn this into your carry-on. It's got a hook on the back for sliding over your rollerboard. So, you know, you slide your rollerboard handle through this, and it rides right on top. It's definitely built for travel. It's a heavy-duty bag. And if you bought a Portabooth Plus and wish it had, you know, it was just a better traveling device, this is the accessory to get for it. So check it out. It's right over there at voiceoveressentials.com. And again, I think that one is on promo price right now for $59.95.
Yeah, I actually used that a couple weeks ago when I was in Florida, along with the Portabooth Plus, which worked very, very well. So there's technique to it, but,
everything has a technique. Yeah.
That's right.
You know, this is not consumer stuff. You know, this isn't made for, being sold at Kmart. This is stuff for specialized use for talent that learns how to use their tools.
That's
and
right.
No matter how cheap or expensive that thing is, make the most out of it, learn how to use it because it's not going to do you a lick of good, no matter how much you pay for it, if you don't know how to use it.
That's right. But Harlan's got some great stuff over there, like the VO1A, which is a great microphone at a great price point, and you got to know how to use it.
That's right.
So that's the most important thing. And we talk about that all the time, that, you know, you can have a $10,000 Telefunken microphone, but if you don't know how to use it, it's going to make it sound like you're on a Sony cassette recorder from 30 years ago.
Yep.
So anyway, so thank you, Harlan, for being an important part of our show, and go over to voiceoveressentials.com. Because that's where all the best stuff is.
Yes. Thank you, Harlan.
Thank you, Harlan. All right.
We did actually get a pick and clip of the week. Should we slam through that real quick?
Oh, absolutely.
I know this is an interesting one. It's 7:30 or 10:30 in the east.
Whatever.
We'll wrap it up soon. But we did get a clip and pick of this week.
Yeah. Now, this is an interesting situation. Throw some of these pictures up. You'll immediately tell where this guy has his studio.
Yeah. So, all I have to do is find that folder, which was conveniently located over here, and now it is not. And now I just have to find it again. That's funny.
Yeah.
It was right there.
So I'll just keep talking
Keep riffing.
Yes. He sent us these pictures, and I immediately saw where he was, because right next to his booth is a sink and a nice marble countertop and a tile floor and stucco walls.
Sam Prendle. Yeah, here we go.
Yeah,
here we go.
He was flying it in.
Let me crop the shot here.
All right.
And you'll get to get a better look at what Dan's describing to you guys here once I resize.
Right. Yes.
Change region. Change this. Click that. Draw a box.
Smaller.
Make it bigger. Smaller. Da-da-da. All right. That's good enough. Okay.
Yeah, okay. Well, he's got audio meat in there, obviously covering up the window in there. But if we can move around. Oh, there's the sink.
Yeah, look down. There's the sink.
Yeah, I think his toothbrush is there somewhere, too. But, you know, if you see a setup like this, just looking at it, he's got the right idea for this. But George and I knew exactly what this thing was going to sound like before we even heard the audio sample from it. Although after listening to it for a few times, it's not all that bad, but there's certain things that he can do to improve this a little bit.
It's most of the way there. It's not, yeah, it's not, you know, it's not a lost cause by any means.
Right. But you can see one of the things that you'll immediately see here is that the stucco wall is right next to the microphone. So what's that going to cause? So play the file there.
The Epson Optical Retail Cart Assembly is as follows. Gather all the cart parts, which will include the accessory kit bag containing 15 tall dividers, 10 short dividers, 4 stabilizer bars, 2 handles, separators, roll base, sidewalls, and handles. It is best to use a standard.
There you go.
Okay. Now, what you can hear is... You can hear he's in a bathroom. Not too bad, though, because he's treated it with the stuff. It looks like audio mute, which essentially is moving blankets.
Hey, he's got it about, you know, halfway to two-thirds of the way there, right?
Right. And one of the things that he's doing right is he's not talking very loud.
Right.
And that's one of the things that, you know, when people say, I've got this echo problem, sometimes they don't even realize they have this echo problem or this reverberation problem in their booth. It's because they're talking very loud. The louder you get, the more reverberation you're going to get off the walls.
More power, so more energy, and more bounce. Ping pong ball harder. It bounces more times.
That's right. So what he's done is he's been able to dampen the walls fairly well, but there's still a little bit more he can do so that there is more dampening behind him. Maybe it might need to be thicker. Maybe he needs some studio suit in there. Who knows? But you know, he's done a good job of taking a space and making it work for him, and just a few minor tweaks, and it'll be there. So.
I meant to ask him, I didn't get a chance, but why it was that he chose the bathroom. You know, maybe it's a spare bathroom, and it's probably one of the least used rooms in the house. And if that's the case, I can understand. But bathrooms tend to be the most reverberant rooms in any house because of the glass and tile. And glass and tile are extremely reflective, right? So even more work to make a bathroom sound good. It takes more blankets, more materials, and it's got to be placed in the exact right place. So, you know, you have the idea, you just got to keep going. You're gonna need at least another 30-40% more of coverage of what you got to get there.
Right. I'm not a big fan of having a large desk in front of you when you're doing this stuff. Reverberation off that. So you've got to be able to treat that properly. So that adds another challenge to it. Mm-hmm. But we appreciate Sam sending that in to us. And you can send your stuff into us. We won't make fun of you. We weren't making fun of Sam. He sounds great.
No, we will give you honest feedback and evaluate what you're doing. You know, and so if you want to do it in private, you can be a member.
You can do it. That's right. And so anyway, but you can also drop us some audio for analysis. George, you do it at your Dropbox. You got your Dropbox working?
It's still screwed up.
I'll show you with mine.
I have the same thing that Dan uses, and it broke, and I can't get it working. And I just been trying a different system. But I have the sound check link on my website. Dan, you got the specimen cup?
Yep.
And we'll be happy to take a listen to your audio clips.
Yeah. So I think that's going to pretty much wrap it up for tonight.
Yeah.
Next week, if those of you who have joined us for these before, we're going to do one. We do one a month. It is our monthly hangout. And if you want to be with us on the hangout and get an invite in there, we have room for 8, you know, party of 8. Email us at ewebshop@gmail.com, and we will put you in our list. We want to see you there.
And then we have
Joyce Castellanos. Go ahead.
No. I was just saying, Joyce Castellanos is coming up the week after that. That's the April the 7th. And then we just added Anthony Mendez.
Ooh.
April 14th. And he is maybe a guy you haven't heard of, although he is pretty active in some of the forums and Facebook and stuff. He's one of my Facebook friends and Twitter friends. But He's a rocketing highward skyward voice talent. So we love having them on the show, guys like him and girls like him that, you know, started with humble beginnings, not maybe in L.A. or just got it started like many of you did and are now seeing a lot of success. We love to see how they do it. And he's going to share that with us next time, or actually on the 14th.
Excellent. You know, if there's somebody else you want us to get on the show, you can also email us at ewabshop@gmail.com, and we'll get in touch with them. Look, we got Tom Kenny on. Who else can we get on?
I know. We got some potential for some great guests on here. Just let us know who you'd really love to have on. And if you happen to know a friend that knows a friend, or you know the agent of so-and-so talent that you'd like to have on, you know, give us a hand. Give us the right people we'll talk to. We'll get them on.
Absolutely. Well, we got lots of people to thank, of course. Tony Gettig and Catherine for monitoring our chat room tonight. That's the best place in this show. You guys get to go to this party every week.
It's a show within the show.
It's a show within a show. We can't always read it because we're busy talking to our guests and doing our thing here, but we really appreciate you being there. Sometimes I wonder if you're even watching us at all. You're just hanging out there, but you seem to like being in there, so please join us in there. Are we still working on a new system for that, George?
We are. We're looking into – actually, that's another thing that Tony and my brother Steven are working on is getting us a new chat tool, new chat client that's a little bit more – I don't know, just a little bit better. Gives us a little bit more control and also lets me go back and see the chat from the whole show. The problem I have with this one is I can only go back a few minutes, and we're working on some better solutions so I can go back and reread some of the chat. It's a lot of fun.
That's right. And of course, we'd like to thank our wives, who without them, this would be a very dark screen right now. And who knows what you'd be doing.
And Dave Kovacia,
Dave Kovacia for lending his voice. That's right. And all of you, because if it weren't for you, we wouldn't be doing it. And we're glad that you show up here every Sunday night. And we'll be back next week. This Wednesday night, hey, make sure you go to the VoiceOver in Toronto mixer, because I know I'll be there. I gave it a plug there, Pat. And I know a couple other folks are going to be joining me up there, take a drive up north up to Toronto and see some of my Toronto friends. And we better go before
Skype explodes.
That's true. Hug Passover Sameach to all my friends out there. And have a good week there, George.
You too, Dan.
All right. And we'll see you next Sunday night. Have a good one.
Take care, everybody. Have a good night.